All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Don't see anybody else walking in from the back. They may still come in a moment. How many people in here, I know this is a singles class, but as Barry said, providing an opportunity for others who are not. I'm getting pretty echoey. Is that echoey? I don't know why. I didn't change anything on my end. test, check. Is that better? Yeah, better. I'm not getting the ringing. So how many in here are actually single, since it's not only singles coming in here? So what, that'd be 4, 6, 7, 8. No, wait, that's not a good sign. My wife raised her hand in the back. So apparently there's plans in the working that I wasn't aware of. No, that's good. Really appreciate you being here. There's always a couple of different approaches, things that can be talked about when you have this kind of class. There are occasions where I've been asked to teach, like, just college-age class or singles that are that age, or even sometimes talking to high school and college, and we talk a lot about mate selection and that type of thing. But as singles get a little past that, that's less critical. And in this congregation, I would tell you that's absolutely not critical. We found out today at lunch that Barry's got some experience with the Indian culture, and would probably be more than happy to just choose your spouse for you. He said he's watched them do that over there. And so if you'd like Barry to choose a spouse, then that just takes care of that completely. So he offered that to Donald at lunch today. And he said he likes Barry, but he does not trust him to that degree. So we're actually going to take a little bit different slant, because we really want to talk about what do we do with our singleness? Not so much the idea of mate selection, but what do we do? And so I've titled this lesson Serving Single. Just thought I'd use that illustration, since we see so many of those kinds of machines and single cup serves, that kind of thing. But Serving Single, what do we do? What do we do with that? Now, I want to kind of just start this way and throw out a couple of items for questions as well, thinking in terms of some things that we need to know, some things that we need to remember, some things that we need to acknowledge if we are in whatever situation we are in. And that's always the case. Right now, you would tell people that serving as a Christian at all is different in this whole COVID-19 situation than it might be at other times. Serving as a Christian is different sometimes, like it is now, because of the political turmoil and unrest that the country that you're in is going on. So we find ourselves, different circumstances affect how we find ourselves choosing to make the things that, the decisions that we do. And singleness is a circumstance that we find ourselves in. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But just some things to remember. One, understand something. Satan is very much after you if you're single. Now, okay, I admit it. He's after all of us. But there are some unique dangers in singleness that are a part of life. Throw out to me some of the challenges in that regard, you think, of singleness, that would be challenges by way of temptations or things that make it difficult that way. Because the very next point is, in fact, singleness is hard. And so you think, but so is marriage. And I'll talk about that in a second. So challenges that go with singleness. A lot of peer pressure that we face. Yeah, good point. So our esteem issues that we wrestle with. Why am I single? Is that something that I'm responsible for? Is it just circumstances? And so I wrestle, am I good enough? Is there a reason that it's not? Other things.
Lack of accountability.
Absolutely. We talked about marriage has that full-length mirror and how helpful it is to have somebody there. And we'll talk a little bit about that accountability, because it may be a time of lack of accountability if we don't make provisions for the accountability. Other things.
Staying pure.
What's that?
Staying
Staying pure, absolutely. And not that that's not a temptation for people who are married. We've obviously seen many people who are married given to that as well, but you find yourself in a different environment. And so Satan is particularly challenging that way. Ways that he challenges our devotion, way that he challenges our purity, way that he challenges our faith. All of that exists when we're single. Loneliness may be a part of singleness that is different than when I have somebody that is with me all the time. Barry mentioned earlier when he was making announcements for this class, it isn't just single going in on the front end. All of us who are married understand that, like he said, in a moment's notice, you could be single and there could be all of those things again and the profound loneliness that goes with that. Barry?
I think there's a danger of getting comfortable being alone.
Yeah, great point. Being comfortable, if you couldn't hear that, Barry said there's a danger of getting comfortable being alone, that I accept this circumstance, but maybe I accept it in the wrong way. And so we're going to talk a little bit of that. I think one of the greatest temptations and one of the biggest challenges we have or a person has when they are single is that we start making wrong assumptions as to what solves the issues themselves. In other words, that marriage is the solution to the challenges that I have as single, but it may or may not be the solution to the issues. It's going to need to solve weaknesses that we may be struggling with. It's going to help us to organize our lives, all the things that go with that. But I always encourage people, and I'm not saying I encourage you, therefore, to seek to remain single, but I would say I would encourage you to understand when you get married, you're getting married to a sinful person in a fallen world. Just understand that. That doesn't necessarily simplify the process of life and of serving God. It helps some things tremendously, not even a question about that, but it complicates some things as well. It doesn't necessarily make you a better servant, and that's what we want to talk about. How do we find ourselves wherever we are in life and become the kinds of servants to God that we ought to have or be? So look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7 with me. Several things that are said here. Some are very easy to understand. I think some are a little more challenging because there are certainly circumstances that are going on at the time that Paul writes these things, and those circumstances play a big role in some of the things that he says. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, the Corinthians were writing to Paul. They were getting information to Paul. You know, it's almost like Paul's receiving information from the Corinthians, and they're saying, hey, what about this? What about this? And so the whole letter to 1 Corinthians appears to be Paul answering questions, responding to things he had heard, responding to things he had been asked. And so that's kind of where we are in 1 Corinthians 7. So he says, now concerning the matters about which you wrote, it is good for a man to have, excuse me, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, each woman her own husband. And the husband should give the wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body. And he goes on to talk about the relationship that they have together. But I want you to drop down to verse 6 with me. And he says, now as a concession, not a command, I say this, I wish that all were as myself. He says, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another kind. And so I want you to just think about that for a second and then pick up with me again a little bit later in that chapter when he says, starting in verse, let's pick up in verse 20. No, I'm going to drop down even a little bit farther than that. So we're going to pick up all the way down in around verse 32. Where he says, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord, but the married man is anxious about worldly things and how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. The unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit, but the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint on you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. Now, just so we're fair with the passage, Paul was writing to people, and what were the circumstances? Why was he writing these kinds of things? Because 1 Corinthians 7 almost sounds like Paul is saying, singleness is better than marriage. That's what it sounds like. You know, marriage is good, but it's kind of a fallback plan if you can't remain single. But what did you notice in that passage, things that he said that were a little unusual to you? Well, let's divide the groups of people up that he's talking to. Who are the groups of people that he's talking to? Unmarried and married. We normally think only in those two terms. In other words, as if these are both permanent situations, but that's not necessarily what he's saying. They're really in this group that he's addressing. There are those that are unmarried, those that are not yet married, and those that are married. Some of these people, and he tells them in this letter, he says, you can get married. That's okay. He says, that's a good thing, as a matter of fact, getting married. So he's not talking to people who have chosen to remain single for life, but he does address them as well. And he addresses them in kind of a strange fashion. He's saying singleness, he says, is what? How did he describe it in verse 6? We don't normally think of him describing the singleness that way, but what does he say? He says, I wish that everybody was the same as I am, but not everyone what? Not everybody has that gift. Do you ever think of that that way? Singleness is a gift from God? There must be a reason that he would even use that kind of terminology. Why would it even be addressed? I think Paul is saying, look, I understand. I wish everybody could just completely not have to concern themselves at all with marriage and just be as I am. But he says, I understand. That's not the way everybody is. There are other times where he talks about there are people that make that choice. There were people, when he talks about eunuchs, people that were made, that choice was made for them. But what about the person that makes the choice? I think what we need to understand is that it's not the minor league of marriage. I've served as both a deacon in a congregation and an elder in a congregation. And I remember when I first served as a deacon, I had somebody, more than one person, who came up to me and said, you know what's next. See, because I was a junior elder then, I just didn't become an elder till later. Almost as if deacons are the minor leagues, the major league is the elders. We sometimes think in terms of singleness is somehow lesser in the kingdom of God than marriage is in the kingdom of God. But I would tell you, it's not really. Matter of fact, I saw a church group. I can't remember what denomination or group it was associated with. They were trying to get their singles and their marriage together, and so they termed the group pairs and spares. So how'd you like to be a spare? What does that say about the group? But I'm saying the mentality is that somehow this is a lesser situation than the situation of being married. And yet Paul says it really is not. Why would you say he would even indicate that it could possibly be a gift? Why would it be a gift? Absolutely. And so Paul is going to say, you know what? There is a unique opportunity for a type of devotion to Christ that is different than the opportunity when you're married. And he describes it by saying, look, there are anxieties that go with the married life that don't exist in the single life. He's not saying there's no anxieties in the single life. He's just saying there are different ones. He says, and so you are uniquely gifted to be able to give a more undivided attention to Jesus Christ. You are more uniquely gifted to have an undistracted ministry toward other people just because of that. And sometimes the tendency is for us to think about what I could do if I was in this situation or to spend so much time focusing on a different situation. Let me put it to you this way. When we had a special class at one of our marriage retreats that was based on evangelizing. How do you evangelize? You realize how much God needs all the groups that exist and all the different scenarios that exist to really be able to evangelize well? So we were asking all our married couples at that class to break up into groups and then talk amongst the table, because here's what you have at any one of those marriage retreats we do. We have married couples who have no children. They're fairly newly married. At almost every one of those, we have couples all the way up to 50 years of marriage. And so you've got some with no children, some that have small children, very young, like toddlers, some that have the middle age or middle school teenage group, some that have adult children because now they're empty nesting. So the challenge was to get somebody from each of those groups at all these different tables and discuss your situation is favorable to reaching out to people of the gospel of Christ differently than the others at the table. Why? Because parents don't, married couples don't always think in those kind of terms. They don't think, you know what? There are ways I can evangelize because I have a three-year-old that I can no longer do in the same fashion when I have a 12-year-old because of the people that I'm going to meet, because of the circles that I'm in. And so we said things like, we had people saying, you know what? Never even thought about it. I was strolling my baby down the sidewalk and somebody stopped me and said, wow, what a beautiful child you have. Well, that's not happening when you're walking around with your teenagers. People are crossing the street. It's like, I see him coming. So but they all of a sudden they're thinking in terms of, you know what? I'm going to meet people. When you have kids that are in school, you're meeting people that you wouldn't meet if they weren't in school, when they're involved in sports or whatever else. So the challenge is the same, I think, when we're thinking in terms of being single. How do I take this gift, this season that exists, because it's just a season of singleness, possibly. It may be temporary. It may be long-term. It may be full. The season only exists daily as we have it. I'm in a season of marriage right now. But Barry pointed out, you know, and by the fact that my wife raised her hand, it may come quicker than I thought. Barry pointed out that the season of my marriage could cease to exist tomorrow or today. All it would require is for a death to happen. And my whole season changes. God says, here's the season you're in today. And that's what I want us to think about in terms of like this class. How do I understand that I am single, that I'm in a season of single, and what it can do to me? Because I'm not saying that there are no anxieties, but give me some anxieties that you know that married couples have that you don't as a single person. Let's take a stab at that one. What's that?
If they have children.
Not even a question about that one. You think parents don't really wrestle with and strain and have tension over the raising of children and the anxiety that goes with children and the choice of their friends and the things that they're doing in school? And so that's just built in. If you have children, that's built in. If you're single, you don't yet have that. You have other anxieties. I'm not saying there's no anxieties. There's no challenges. The question is, how do I tap the resources that I have? Other anxieties that you don't have. That you know exist because of a marriage. Yes.
In a marriage, I guess any commitments that you make, time commitments, you consult with your spouse because it affects them and working in the house.
Absolutely. Start thinking about the choices that we make, and now I've got to take other people into consideration before I even make the choice. And that's what Paul said. Paul said, if you're married, he says, you have to be concerned with all your decisions and whether or not you're pleasing your spouse, whether you're the wife or the husband. I can't just independently decide I'm going to do whatever I want to do once I have become a unit. But I do have that right before I'm in that relationship. It's interesting when God talks about vows back in Deuteronomy, and we'll look at that passage tomorrow in a lesson, but it's interesting that God makes the statement in Deuteronomy. He says, nobody made you do this. He's not talking about marriage, he's talking about vows in general. He says, nobody made you do this, but because you voluntarily said it out of your mouth, you are now obligated in some fashion. The day I said I do, or I will, whichever, automatically I took on extra responsibilities and extra choices. I didn't have to do that. He's saying you didn't have to do that, but I did. And so those are anxieties. Other things that you think about. Anything else you think of besides children and just whether or not the spouse agrees?
The time that it takes to foster a good, godly marriage and make sure everyone's feeling loved and supported and taken care of in all the ways that they
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just a matter of me before I make a decision what's going to make my wife happy. How much effort has to be put into building that relationship the way that it's supposed to be? If you sat through the classes this morning, you realize God is saying, this doesn't just happen. You're going to have to put a lot of effort into having this. And all of a sudden you realize, I don't have those same anxieties to go with that. He says that you're wide open for worship and for devotion and for ministry to others without the same regard. And so we want to talk a little bit about that idea in the sense of saying, so if I have this incredible potential, singleness creates potential. Marriage creates potential. But different. God expects me to look at my marriage and say, so how can you be the best servant? In your marriage, how can you be the best servant? And now we're empty nesters. God would want me to continue to evaluate. You don't have any kids living at home. You have grandchildren that you're being. How can you be the best servant of God, Mark, as a father and a grandfather with no kids at home? That's my job because that's the season of life that I'm in. If you're single, it's the same thing. How do I tap the potential? How do I look at that and make sure that I'm tapping that potential? And so here's just a few things that I'd like us to think about regarding how I get that undivided devotion to Christ, how I get that undistracted ministry to other people. How do I tap that resource? Because I would tell you, there's no question that Satan will do everything he can to keep you from tapping that resource, the same as he'll do everything he can to keep me from tapping the resources I have as a married person. So he's going to be fighting us. We need to understand that. It doesn't just happen. We've got this enemy the whole time. He's trying to get us away from what we're supposed to be doing. If you remember during the, so it was 91, I think, the Gulf War, 91. So I'm trying to think how many of these people were old enough to even remember the first Gulf War. But the phrase that was absolutely around that was weapons of mass destruction. You ever heard anybody talk about it? I'll tell you, here's what Satan's a master with. Satan is the master with weapons of mass distraction. He has an incredible ability to find a way to divert our way of thinking. And so with marriage, I'm telling you, sometimes we just visited our sons and daughters-in-law, two of them up in Kentucky. Between the two of them, they have 8 kids, 4 on each side. The one family that we were up there celebrating the birthday is the son and daughter-in-law that have a 6-year-old and then triplets that are 2 years old that we were up there celebrating the birthday. And I'm just telling you for 2 things. One, I couldn't function. That's why God gave the 30-year-old triplets, not me. I couldn't function in that environment. But the amount of distraction that automatically exists, not a bad thing. Kids are wonderful. But I'm saying, the amount of time that occupies is unbelievable. I had forgotten some of that. And so now that we're empty nesters, we're closer to a syndrome or a season that would be like single than we are to that raising of the triplets. And so what about distractions, though, for singles? Because I think that's what he wants us to understand. How do I use my singleness? And I would tell you, the first thing you have to do is you have to find a way to avoid trading marital distractions for other distractions. So what kind of distractions do you have when you're single? In this iPad, iPhone, I want culture that we live in. I saw a hand go up. I'm sorry. Yes?
Well, I personally want to devote time to finding a potential marital partner. That is time and energy that could otherwise be spent serving God.
And not that God would say, cease that activity entirely. But I think God would have us to make sure we're prioritizing things right. But that can become an all-consuming thing as well, can it not? I can get so focused on that this is the solution, that I've got to do this because this is the solution, that I miss everything in between. Other distractions when you're single?
Career.
Very easy to switch my focus. Maybe that's not even what got me there originally, but maybe I shift my focus because I am single, and so I'm just going to dedicate a lot more time to this and pursuing that. And that becomes a self-perpetuating issue as well, does it not? The harder I pursue that, and if we're not careful, if I don't have the ability to continue to keep the priorities straight, the harder I pursue that and the farther I get along in that, the more it creates the desire for that to become the focus of my life. Other things?
Recreational?
Yeah, absolutely. Recreational. That prior to me getting married, that was without question where my time was dedicated. Played multiple sports, got involved in things, and so it just becomes all time-consuming. Why? Because I had no wife, and so if somebody says, hey, we're playing ball, you know, can you come play ball with us? Can you come play basketball? Can you come play this? Can you go watch this? Can you do this? It is easy to allow other distractions to come in. It may be a time when people are watching more, binge-watching their favorite show. People are working out. People are become foodies. I've met people who their whole joy in life is going to every specialty restaurant they can find and trying all these new foods. And very easy. Social media. People spend inordinate amounts of time. And I'm telling you, as a married person, that's harder to do. So I know single people are spending more time on social media than most married people. Not all, but most married people. I don't even have time to read everything that gets posted. I have a Facebook page only for certain reasons, mostly to get pictures of family, but you know, as a Christian, I hate to tell people, no, you can't be my friend. So we friend them, and then I unfollow them immediately. So because if you unfriend them, they know that. But if you just unfollow them, they don't know that. So it's like friend them and then unfollow them. But really, I mean, do you not think people spend an inordinate amount of time on social media today? And how about gaming? You should do, I didn't bring the chart this time. The amount of time that is spent on social media and gaming, I use that in a how technology is destroying marriages and families. I did that in a lesson in one of our marriage retreats. Unbelievable. I had no idea. I had no idea that the amounts of time and hours that are spent on social media are being spent in our country. But all of those things, and I think it's important. God's not saying, you know what? You can't play a game. You can't watch your favorite show. You can't do any of that. He's saying you don't have to eliminate everything, but you got to find a way to limit and control. Somebody has to be in control of the life, and if we're not careful, Paul said, I'll not be mastered by anything. And so we need to find a way to limit and control the things that we're doing. So that's one of the things. Make sure that I'm not just bringing in replacement distractions. So you have no kids to distract you, so I'm distracting myself with other things. Sometimes we even seek distraction because distraction has a tendency to eliminate what we think is boredom. The more we're entertained and taken care of, the less bored or lonely we are. That's really not God's solution. That's our solution. That's not God's. My kids as high schoolers, probably no different than most other high schoolers. One of the most common phrases I heard from them was, I'm bored. So they learned not to say that because my solution was always the same. Give them some work. That's God's solution to boredom. It's not entertain you. God's solution is get up and do something for somebody. Do something for God. Do something for someone else. So I need to make sure that the distractions aren't taking over my life. Another great advantage of being single, I would tell you, saying yes to the spontaneous in life. That's a tremendous advantage. Spontaneous. How many of you have spontaneous friends? People you say, man, they're just spontaneous. I do. They're all single. It's like your married friends aren't spontaneous because they really just can't be as spontaneous. You know, somebody says, hey, we hadn't planned it, but you know, we're gonna do this tomorrow. We're gonna go here. It's like, can't do it. Got this activity, this is already all planned. Say yes to the spontaneous. Yes to the things that you can do. Yes to having a random phone conversation with somebody. Yes to coffee with somebody. Yes to ways to serve people. To going to help somebody with a move. To helping somebody that's sick. When there's the spontaneous need. The singles can handle that better than the marrieds can handle that just because of the activities that already exist. So they announce somebody. Do you ever think in those kind of terms? They announce somebody as being sick at the congregation. Think of how much easier it is for a single person to immediately respond to that than it is for a married person to respond to that. But who normally responds to it? I'm not saying in this congregation, I'm saying who do you think is a typical rule responds to that? I can tell you who it is at ours. It's probably not only the married person, it's probably the married person that's already doing the most. We need to find a way to say, God, here's the situation I'm in today. May I still be married at some point? I may be, but I'm not today. What can I do today? I can't be impulsive as a married man the way that I could be if I was single. And even more so, even when you don't feel like it, spontaneity works. Be spontaneous. Say yes to the spontaneous. God's not as interested in if I always feel like it. Freedom to invest yourself, invest your time is absolutely critical. Think in terms of if I've got the Spirit of God in me and a free calendar. You ever think of that? You ever look at your calendar, Barry, and say, I got no time this week. I got no time for anything. I met with a guy, talked to him, phone. We did a Zoom-type meeting, a couple of them, recently. He's single. I think he's about 32. And he said, I spend all day at work pretty much by myself, which is probably exacerbated by COVID. But then he says, and then I go home. I spend all night at home by myself. I said, why? If you've got the Spirit of God in you, if you're trying to serve God, and you look at your calendar, it says, hey, there's nothing on it. You ever think, yes, how exciting. I can go do anything I want to do to help somebody. I've got a free calendar in the Spirit of God. Could a Christian ask for anything more than free time in the Spirit of God in our lives so that I can serve? I think God would have us to understand that there are chances to bear unbelievable fruit because I have the time and because I have God on my side. We just have to think in those kinds of terms. Challenge myself. How do I use this in order to serve God? And so as we think about that, practice selflessness while you're still alone, because that's more difficult when you're not. In other words, in Philippians, when Paul told those brethren, do nothing out of selfish ambition, do nothing out of conceit, but esteem others better than yourself. I would tell you, that's advice for everybody, whether you're married or not. But I can tell you it's going to get harder once you're married. Selflessness towards your wife is not. But I have other commitments. I cannot, when we had our three kids at home especially, I could not devote myself to all the things I would like to devote myself to, or I have to sacrifice my marriage or my parental relationships to do so. And God says, you're married, those relationships have to come first. My wife is that first priority, my children are that second priority, and then continuing to serve. Now, that's serving God, I understand that, don't get me wrong. Doing what I need to for my wife and my children is my service to God at that point, but it automatically reduces what I can do for you. And I don't have that problem prior to heaven. That's what Paul's saying. Paul's saying, look, I'm just trying to say this for your own benefit. He said, not to lay any burden on you or anything of that sort. He said, I'm just telling you there are anxieties, there are challenges that come that aren't there when you're there. So how could you do that? How could you choose to practice more selflessness, or singles in general, if you don't want to make the statement personal to you? Give me some things you can do in singleness, maybe that you hadn't thought about or that you hadn't been doing on a regular basis. Absolutely. If you didn't hear that, he says set up Bible studies, find another single person that you can have those studies with and just have those discussions. How important is that Bible studies? Even if you're not the type of person that is just naturally gifted toward evangelistic efforts, because you haven't done this much, I think everybody can evangelize. But if that's not where you're gifted, are there not other Christians that you could at least say, hey, let's start a prayer group? Or how many times is that happening? You know, people are saying, as I mentioned earlier, we do a Saturday morning Bible storytelling time with the kids. Start something like that up. You think, kids love that. Parents love that because it takes the kids off their hands for just at least an hour while they're sitting in another room. But we just sit the kids around and we tell a story from the Bible and do it all in story form, but just entertaining the kids with the Bible. Setting up a prayer group, setting up a Bible study, anything of that. How many people in here use things like Meetup or anything of that sort? Anybody still doing Meetup? I didn't know who still even did that. But just our breakfast Bible studies that we do are at the park. So if somebody's walking by, you can say, hey, why don't you have some breakfast with us? We're just going to read a little scripture after this. And everybody's welcome. It just gives you an opportunity to reach out in different ways. Other things you can think of that you might be able to do. Absolutely. If you're going to do much evangelizing of people, you're going to find out there has to be some relationship built most of the time anyway. You think you're going to knock on many doors cold and get them to just sit down and study the Bible. Not happening often. I'm not saying it won't ever. Not happening often. You've got to build some relationship. It was always Jesus, even to evangelize. Jesus had compassion on people and supplied needs other than biblical needs to people to help them out and develop the relationship as he was going to share the gospel with them. It gave him a right, I think, to say the things he was going to say. So same way with us, even with our brethren. How about just doing some other things first? How about just spending some time with them? One of the things, I don't know if that's in this next, there it is. Okay, I wasn't sure that was the next point or not. I've got to spend time with both married people and not yet married people. I didn't want to just say single because it may not be people who are single for life, but people who are not yet married. So give me the advantage of both and how you might be able to do it. We've already talked about maybe getting with another single person. Paul was single, often alone. You ever think about that, Paul? Rarely was Paul alone. Paul always had somebody with him, didn't he? Always working alongside somebody because that's the way it works best. So other things. Advantages of not yet married or single people spending time with married people.
I guess you can gain some wisdom as to how you can kind of see how that married couple deals with one another and kind of get their perspective on life.
Absolutely. Getting a better perspective from them, gaining some wisdom from them. I always tell the unmarried or not yet married, you need to spend time with some married people because I think it's good for single people to see flawed marriages. Why would it be good to see a flawed marriage? Because they're all flawed. So I don't care who you choose. You're going to find a flawed marriage. There's struggles in every marriage. Where's the benefit in a single person seeing a flawed marriage? Now, if it's dysfunctional, don't follow that. You know, you ever seen Everybody Loves Raymond? The old show? Okay, we talked about at marriage retreats, we wouldn't even have to say anything. We could just show those episodes and say, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. I'm not saying dysfunctional, but flawed. There's problems, there's issues, there's struggles, there's challenges. What's the benefit in that?
Get that fairy tale image out of your head.
Not even a question. You know, one of the biggest things that I deal with when I'm dealing with younger couples who are already married and are having struggles is unmet or wrong expectations going into the marriage. Man, we just have the wrong idea sometimes. And I think it's helpful for people who are not yet married to make sure you've got the right expectations. And I say that because, and I have no idea the situations here, but I do know that I have met people before. You know, one guy in particular that's a friend with one of our sons, still not married, and probably never will be, because he's got the total wrong expectation of what his wife is going to be. And so he's got this bar set up here somewhere that isn't real. It's not even a real person. He needs to see good, strong, married couples together work through things. It doesn't all just fall into place. It's not perfect. Other benefits. Absolutely. How helpful is it for Christians to be able to relate to one another, to be able to understand. We run into that battle. I had a good discussion with a good friend of mine, Dempsey Collins, who preaches in Lexington now. He said, how come in the Bible, it seems like all nations were coming together, and so many in the church, so many passages are written on how to maintain unity because you're bringing all these different cultures together. And he says, yet in the United States of America, you see almost none of that in the Lord's church. And he said, in other words, like the location I am in San Antonio, a lot of Hispanic population, are those cultures blending in the church to really develop unity? Not always. And why? Because we don't understand one another, and we're not going to understand one another unless we sit down and learn. And I would tell you, I've been married for 43 years. So I can tell you some things about marriage. I have very little understanding, real understanding, other than what people have told me, of what singleness even is. So how helpful is it for me to have somebody who's saying, look, here's what we're going through. If I'm going to help them understand, you know, marriage is a great thing, but here's some things you need to learn. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Those are the things you need to learn if you're a husband. Yes, ma'am. But, you know, same way in reverse. I need to learn that. So that's a great point. So why spend time with the not yet married or unmarried? I'm not saying for the married person. I'm saying for the unmarried person. Why spend time? Because I'm saying I think you need to spend time with both. And so that's a huge help, is it not? Somebody that at least it understands it at a different level. They're experiencing the same thing. They can not only, and I don't mean just so you can commiserate and like whine together. That's not the issue. But it's learning from that. How are they dealing with that? My wife can tell you, when we had the three young kids, one of her greatest joys in life was to hear another mother talk about how terrible her day was. Not because she wanted misery for the other person, but to say somebody else gets it. Because if I came home from work, I didn't always, the father who's gone all day and comes home doesn't get what the wife's going through at the house. That's just the truth. We try, but we don't necessarily get that. But I can assure you one thing, every mother that has children like that mother does understands at a different level what she's going through. Isn't that true? God gives us people so that we can comfort and help one another. To me, a great example of that concept is, I don't even know how old I was. I'd have to think back, but considerably older. Had never lost anybody close to me in life. I mean, it was just one of those unusual circumstances. All my family was still alive, and nobody had passed. I hadn't lost a friend. That's just an unusual circumstance. So, my wife lost her mother when, as a matter of fact, after we went on our very first date in college. She was a freshman in college and lost her mother to cancer. She could understand at a different level every other person that was in that circumstance. Wouldn't you agree with that? That I couldn't understand. I could sympathize. She could empathize. There's a difference. That's the nature of spending time with people. You've got to find ways to hook up with the people that are in the same circumstance as you, not so you can sit around and have a complaint session. It's just that you've got similar circumstances and some similar experiences, and you benefit from one another. And so how do you do that? Well, we said, maybe set up a prayer time, maybe set up a Bible study, maybe set up a group that just gets together to do something. Christians need to be building one another up as well as reaching out to the lost in regards to however they can reach those people. And so I think that's important. God never intended singleness to mean you were alone. It's just the resources that you're tapping. Yeah, Barry?
Singles may not understand, too, how much most married people love to be married.
Yeah, great point.
It's energizing.
Great point. And so tell me ways you can spend more time with them, with the married people. Think about that. How can you, because you don't want to impose yourself on them, but you can't be afraid to initiate the conversation either. Because generally the married people are hesitant to impose on the single people. You know, think about how many times I can think as a married person when our kids were younger. There have been a lot of times I'd like to have gone to numerous of the single people at the congregation and said, look, we are worn to a frazzle. Would you consider coming over and watching our kids for 3-4 hours one night? But you're hesitant to do that. What an incredible blessing it would have been to have had someone single in the congregation to come to us and say, hey, we'd love to just come over and spend some time. Sit with your kids. You guys go out and do something. You know what? You guys have had a lot on your plate this week. You know what? We've got it covered. I've got a crew coming over. We're coming over to take care of the lawn. Can we have, you know, we'll fix you dinner. Spend some time with you. Yes?
From my perspective as a married woman with lots of children, it's hard to have conversations with another person at any time when we're around children. So, like, to how to serve me specifically, I love just going out somewhere with someone else, period. Get me out of the house. That sounds wonderful, and it's serving. It builds me up so much to have companionship outside of.
Yeah, great point. And so we have to be creative to do that. You have to think creatively. How can I find the need and help step in and take care of that need? How is it that I can be the person that is just willing to jump in and provide some means of doing that? And so as a single person, you've got that opportunity. Don't leave it up to the marriage to ask you. Ask them if you can be a part of their life. Find a way to hook up with each other and to gain the strength that you need to gain. And so not spending the time alone, but finding a way to make sure that you did that. And then I would tell you, it all falls under this last part for me. Remember why you were called. Remember why you're called. You're a Christian for a reason. You ever think about that when we're baptized and we become Christians? For what? I was doing a Bible study with a set of doctors in St. Louis one time that one of our elders was a doctor, and he set up this study with these other doctors. And we get to have some really good conversations. They were all, I believe the entire group of the ones that wasn't the elder. They were all Filipino. They were all Catholic, I believe, all four of the other ones I studied with. But we had some really good Bible studies. One of them was a surgeon. The other three were different types of doctors. And I talked to the surgeon one time, and he just happened to say, we got pretty big egos. And so I thought, well, I'll just kind of go on that. Let's talk about that a little bit. Because he said, we got pretty big egos. So I asked him, why do you think that is? And he said, if I'm operating on somebody, in trauma especially, he said, and the result of your surgery saves a life, he says, you go out of there just absolutely with a high that you know what you did gave that person life. And maintain their life. And that's the way he described it. And so I said, what'd you save them for? He goes, what do you mean, what did I save them for? He said, I took an oath that I was, I said, no, I understand why you saved them, because you have an oath and because you have the ability and the God-given skills and talent and intelligence to do all, I understand all of that. To what purpose did you save them? It took us a while to get through the question, but I finally said, I understand you don't get to determine that, what they do with their life. But you save lives, whatever you do to help other people, it's to now allow them to be or become and do what they're supposed to do. Wouldn't you agree with that? Paul said we're baptized into Christ. And you get to Peter, and Peter says, man, you're a special people. Special people. And I would tell you, single or married, doesn't make any difference. Think of the value we have in the kingdom of God. He says, you are such a special people. He says, you're this chosen nation. He says, this holy priesthood, this peculiar people in the sense of so set apart people. You remember what the reasoning for that was? Because he said, there's a reason. God didn't save us to make us special people. We are special people because we're his. But do you remember what he said in 1 Peter? He said, you're this special people. He said, in order that you proclaim the praises of him and his excellency, the one who saved us. He said, there is no point in being a Christian if I don't understand I'm a Christian to do what God wants me to do. And so I'm striving to be what God, he says, Mark, I didn't say, and we do that sometimes with baptism, I would tell you. I think we misunderstand baptism a lot of times because we put all the emphasis on the forgiveness of sins. Don't get me wrong. It happens. We're buried and we have forgiveness of sins and we come up absolutely clean. But you realize most of the passages in the New Testament talk about baptism or talking to Christians, not non-Christians? Why in the world would that be? Because he's saying, you're missing something. And Peter said, you're myopic. He used that word, nearsighted, myopic. He says, because you've missed the point. Paul said, you didn't just have forgiveness of sins. You were raised in newness of life so you could walk a whole new fashion. That's the nature of who we are. Remember why we were called. I'm a Christian, whether I'm single, whether I'm single permanently, I've made that choice. If I have that gift, whether I'm just not yet married or whether I'm married, whoever I am, I'm in my circumstance of life, and my entire purpose for God should be, what can I do for God right now because I'm in the circumstance I'm in? Isn't that the way Paul was? Paul was in prison when he wrote to the Philippians. So, I mean, imagine being in prison and saying, wow, this is great, guys. I couldn't have asked for anything better than to be in prison. Why? Why was it so great for Paul to be in prison? People that he wouldn't have met otherwise, right? He said, I get to talk to Caesar's household. I get to talk to the prison guards. These are people I'd never met if I wasn't in prison. How hard is it? Here's what I think Paul helps us to do that I think is absolutely critical in the book of Philippians. When he's making those statements, we have a tendency to do this. We have a tendency to look at our role for Christ, and here's all our circumstances that sometimes just kind of gets in the way and clouds that. And Paul says, I need you to reverse the order of the picture. I need you to take Christ and put him here and view all your circumstances through Jesus Christ. Because then, it doesn't mean there are no challenges, but it's saying, you know what, this is fantastic that I've got three teenagers that are about to cause me to pull all my hair out. But that's the situation I'm in life. How do I use it for God? This is great. I'm single. I'm going to meet people that I wouldn't meet if I was married. How can I use that for God? I think that's what he would have us do. Remember why you were called. Focus on God, not on your relationship status. It's not saying that your relationship status isn't there. It's just saying you got to get him in the right viewpoint. My focus has to be God first, my relationship status second. I may get out of that relationship status, and I may not. I love Nehemiah, because here's what I would tell unmarrieds to do, or not yet marrieds, whichever way you want to look at that. Nehemiah chapter 4:17 has an incredible picture for us. If you remember the story of Nehemiah, he's born in captivity. He's never even seen Jerusalem, but he's grieving over it when they come and tell him the walls are all broken down. He eventually gets to go back, and they're building the wall. And it says the people built the wall to half its height because they had a mind to work, which I think that's a tremendous sermon in itself. They had a mind to work, and so they were building the wall. They were doing good. But then the enemy started threatening, and they also looked around. They said, look at all the rubble. We'll never get this wall built. The focus changed, like Peter did. You remember Peter walked on water? You ever think, would you have stepped out of the boat? I'm thinking, Peter took a pretty big step to step out of the boat and walk across water. But then it says he saw the waves and the wind. He didn't see Jesus anymore. Getting the focus right is critical. So in Nehemiah, the enemy starts saying that they're going to come and they're going to tear down the wall and everything else. And do you remember the posture of the builders? Does anybody remember what it says about them? It says they had a brick in one hand and they had a spear in the other hand. I think that's the picture, even if you think in terms of, that is saying awareness and working. I'm aware of where I am. I can be hopeful for the future of where I may be. God's not saying give up on being married. He's saying be aware, be hopeful, don't stop working. Make sure you've got a brick in the other hand and keep working. And so when we're called to serve Christ, I think that's what he would say. He'd say you can't go AWOL. You can't go AWOL. And that probably is the biggest danger for both the distractions that come in marriage and the distractions that come outside of marriage. It is we allow the distractions to cause us to lose our focus and go AWOL. Don't do that. Open your eyes, but work with your hands. Be aware. It never hurts to keep looking. Should it be my primary focus in life? No. God should be my primary focus in life. But God would say, man, keep hopeful. Continue to pray to God, but continue to work. Don't let that distract you from what you need to do. And then I would tell you, finally, use your singleness to develop other relationships. to develop other relationships. So how many of you in here that are single have siblings? All right, so maybe it's an opportunity to really spend some time with a brother or a sister, actual physical brother or sister. Or as a single, to develop a whole new, stronger relationship with a parent or with a friend. Because when I don't have as many relationships, I can spend more time on each relationship. Does that make sense? Let me show you what happens when you get married. Those numbers represent relationships. 2, 6, 12, 20. Now, I would just tell you, anybody that says that you can devote as much time and as much depth to every relationship when you have 20 as you can when you have 2, just missing the point. You can't do that. I asked somebody one of the things I was doing when I was teaching a class on social media. I said, how many friends do you have on Facebook friends or whatever? I had one person tell me, I've got 2,600 friends or somewhere around there. I said, you can't have 2,600 friends. You can have 2,600 people maybe on your Facebook page. You can't possibly even know 2,600 people. You can't do that. You can't have relationships with that many people. Well, here's what happens even in marriage. That represents husband and wife, 2. One child creates 6 relationships. 2 children create 12 relationships. 3 children create 20 relationships in that household. In a household with 3 children, there are 5 people who have relationships with 4 other people. There are 20 relationships in a 3-child household that are going on. You think that that doesn't create its own issues? I would tell you, God says tap the chance that you have now. Is it the most favorable situation? No, probably not. You may want the companionship. You may want to have children. You may want to have the relationship of marriage. There's the sexual purity that is needed, and God provides that meaning. Even Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, he says it's definitely better to marry than it is to burn with passion. All of those things are real. But even with that, he would say, you've got a gift right now of time and availability that you can still dedicate to the Lord. And I think that's what God would have us to do. To take the singles to just say, you know what? We're going to become incredible, radical servants of God, creative servants of God with our singleness. Any questions or comments? And I would ask the singles, fair or not fair? Because I don't present to singles near as much as I do to married couples. So you don't have to acknowledge that right now. But if after this class is over, you want to come up and say, man, you totally missed the boat on that one, then I'm okay with that. Yes?
I am married, but I would like to make a comment on what I remember from being single. I think I, as a married person who is an English nester, have a whole lot more time than a single person does. Because I am not having to go to work outside of home. I remember as a single working person thinking I have no time for anything. Because you have to deal with your own car issues, you have to deal with your own house issues, you have to deal with your work issues. And you don't have a second person who can take some of those for you. So I almost think it's a little bit unfair to say that singles have just tons of extra time.
And I appreciate that. And the point that I would be making is not that they have unlimited time, but that singleness automatically creates a different time frame than married with children creates. Now, as an empty nester, and that was the point I made, I'm as close to single as I could get at this stage because I don't have all those same time consumptions. But I think what Paul would have us to understand, service to God doesn't necessarily mean I'm always doing something in addition to. When Paul was in prison, not great time for Paul, but Paul's saying, these are the people that are around me. Singles who are working, singles who go see a mechanic. When I go to the hospital, you know, if I have to go to the hospital for something, you ever think in terms of, this is great. I never would have met that nurse if I hadn't been in the hospital. And so I'm saying, I think the goal of Christians and the purpose of Christians is to think, no matter what my circumstance is, how can I serve God to the fullest capability? So it's not saying singleness doesn't have anything else. All Paul is saying is there are distractions that go with marriage that don't exist when you're not attached to somebody else. I think he's just saying don't lose that. Don't lose that. That provides an opportunity to serve that is different. Does that make sense? I certainly would not want to make it seem like, singles have nothing to do. That's not the case. No question about that. every bit as busy as others. But we just need to make sure it's busy with the things that are of the Lord and busy with the things that I have to do. I don't want to fill it with the distractions of the world. Any other questions or comments or anything? All right. Well, I appreciate that very much. If Barry doesn't mind, I'll just close out with a prayer at this session. And Lord willing, we'll see everybody tomorrow when we talk a little bit more. One lesson on the marriage, on the covenant of marriage and the significance of that, and two lessons tomorrow for the parents on, so what do you do with the rugrats? You know, how do I raise them the right way? So let's pray. Father, we are grateful for the day. So grateful. And we understand that no matter where we are in life, it comes with challenges. It comes with hopes and it comes with disappointments. It comes with work to be able to be the kind of people we're supposed to be. We understand that. And we ask you, Father, not to remove the circumstances from our life, the difficulties from life, though we may wish to have them changed. We know that we're challenged either way. What we ask you for is to clear our vision. Help us to see better that whether we are presently unmarried or we're married with children or we're empty nesters, whatever phase and season of life we find ourselves in, may we understand that the most important thing is that we are yours and we seek to do your will while we're here on this earth. We pray that you'd give us the wisdom to do that and to maintain the dedication to you that is needed, to make sure that we understand that we are every bit as valuable to you and your kingdom in every one of these roles, that nobody is too old, nobody is too young, nobody, because of married or not, is any less valuable and needed in your kingdom. May we understand our role, and may we be willing to step into it, and may we work hard to serve you in every capacity that we can. We would pray all of this through the name of your Savior, or your Son and our Savior, Jesus the Christ. Amen.